Now we take you to Speaking from the Heart with your hostess, Gloria Taylor Edwards.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
Maybe then. Good evening, audience, and welcome to another edition of Speaking from the Heart, and I'm your host, Gloria Taylor Edwards. As always, thank you for tuning in. It's the first of the month, and we are live and in living color. So, don't think it's a rebroadcast. It's the first of the month, so it's Women on Point, and we do have a discussion. Actually, this evening is going to be a roundtable discussion. So, I'm introing myself, my co-host for Women on Point. I guess we've been doing this a decade now. I've lost track of how long. But she's going to intro herself. And the topic on the table this evening, audience, is none other than the business of incarceration. And that takes in a whole lot. And I've even got someone in studio that hasn't been in studio with me. And, well, I haven't seen him in a couple of years. And he's my child. He's one of my grown children out there. So we've got some good stuff in store for you. Having said that, I'm going to let my co-host come to you on her own. And we're going to go around the table and intro ourselves. And then we'll say a little special something about my special guest, my child in the house.
I put out on Facebook today that you don't have to call the devil because he'll come on his own. My name is Shirley T. Burke.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Good evening. I'm Terry Dysick, and I'm glad to be here.
I'm Keith DeBlasio. I'm working on the community restoration campaign here in Virginia, and I'm very happy to be here tonight.
Yeah, but Keith. Yes, Keith. Oh,
all right. And so we got a full house. Yes, we got a forum going on. And for those who have heard or have been listening through the years, I hope that you've heard some of the broadcasts we've done with Keith. At one point, we were doing On Point. But Keith, certainly on the issue of incarceration, this is Terry and Shirley have certainly pulled this one together. I'm so grateful for them and helping a sister out on this particular topic. Terry has pulled together some informational stuff. You need to sit back because we're going to share. We hope that you're going to become, if not a part of the program, you're going to get some information, some things you can do, because Keith is working during an assembly. He's going to tell you some stuff going on there. His organization, Advocare Inc., and Smart on Crime, we must say, is out there working with organizations like Virginia Cure, RIHD. We sent out a list of organizations that are out there. Virginia has some organizations that are out there working on this issue. We need to familiarize ourselves with them, how we can become a part of helping. Yep. And some of us need information for our own selves and our families. But I think helping also helps you to feel better, that you don't feel so bad when you do need help. That you have not offered some vehicle, some means. If I can write a letter, as Keith may ask you to just sign your name to something that's meaningful to you. Terry may suggest a meeting you can come out to. Shirley has some information to share on employment. Because this is indeed, I think it was a documentary called Incarceration Nation. This is Incarceration Nation. I think we lead the world if we don't. In incarceration. I'm not going to throw numbers and statistics out there for you. We all know that this country ranks number one in front of Russia as far as incarcerating people. I've got numbers on it, but I don't think I need to go through that.
Yeah, you do.
I do?
Yeah, you do.
Need to hear it.
Yeah, people don't know it.
Okay.
Maybe it'll get them to do
I just cannot imagine, because it's always amazing to me in an industrialized country like ours would rank this. I mean, the latest statistics or whatever. Well, since 2002, actually, the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world.
I don't know
what was going on between 2002. In the world. And although prison populations are increasing in some parts of the world, the natural rate of incarceration for countries comparable to the United States tends to stay around 100 prisoners per 100,000 population. But the U.S. rate is 500 prisoners per 100,000 residents. Or about 1.6 million prisoners. And this statistic came from 2010. And that's according to the latest available data from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. Of course, men make up 90%. A few years ago, women started rivaling men as far as incarceration.
Yes.
But this is indeed incarceration nation. There is also issues with juveniles. There's some things I know that Keith's organization has been following pertaining to youth in the system, but the incarceration rate in the United States of America is the highest in the world. And that is just amazing to me that we have it and that we aren't addressing it. And this is it's a business.
It is.
It's a $1 billion. Yes. Can somebody else speak to that?
Yes,
this makes money.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I know. When I was working in corrections, in juvenile corrections, roughly about, I guess, 12 to 14 years ago, they started talking about the privatization and that it was going to be headed that direction. You know, and it was big money in privatization, privatizing prisons and what have you. And so they were making money off people's, even on the low end of crime. You know, you can get incarcerated now 10 years for bad checks, you know, depending on
yeah.
where you live.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of folks that are going in on things that typically in the past, or I guess 20 years ago, you would not have become incarcerated behind. But it's a money-making business, and it's good. And
it is. Beyond education, beyond the money we put
right,
in education.
Right. They saw more of a profit coming from having the prisons than the educational sites. And if you even look around Richmond, we haven't had, you know, we're just starting to rebuild some of these schools. And the prisons have been growing and growing and growing, the spaces.
Yeah.
And, you know, they look at not having a third grade reading level as far as...
Got a jail cell waiting for you.
They're creating
yes.
a spot,
yes.
predicting the number of cells they may need in
yeah.
the future.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to add, one of the sad things about it is just recently, within the past year or so, one of the huge private corrections management companies offered 47 states contracts
wow.
to buy out their prison system, helping reduce their debt and their budget expenses. In exchange, those contracts would mandate that the states would have to keep those prisons 90% occupied.
Wow.
That
is just scary.
So there's a financial benefit
yeah.
to keep the crime rates up. That's
yes.
what we're saying, is that the bottom line is, if we keep the crime rates up, these private companies will come in and bail out state budgets. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
One hand washes the other.
Yeah. And this affects, families are affected, communities are affected,
yes,
you are
right.
affected by this. This affects every last one of us.
And it doesn't matter your neighborhood.
No.
I need to say that. It does not
yeah.
matter your neighborhood. And we in America, we sort of ride on that. I hear that a lot, but I live here. I live there. But it does not matter. Crime is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is true. And, you know, we recently had a training as we're trying to move with the wonderful movement of restorative justice, trying to help
mm-hmm.
folks address conflict.
What's the name of it again?
Restorative justice.
Okay.
Sylvia Clute in this area is leading that
yes.
piece there.
Yes.
And, you know, we had some folks at the training who were afraid to go out in the neighborhood that we were having a training, and I thought it was so interesting.
I bet when Keith wasn't.
Oh, no.
Keith
was
sure.
all right.
Okay.
So you can't not be afraid. I mean, you can't be afraid to step outside these doors, and yet you want to go and implement this service. I said, this same problem can happen in your neighborhood.
Yes.
When you look at the guns and who's firing into these schools and so forth,
mm.
it's all over. It's all neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so it's happening everywhere. So don't be so quick to judge.
Yes.
Don't be so quick to judge.
Yeah.
And where have these mass shootings been?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In the affluent neighborhoods.
They've been in affluent neighborhoods.
Totally. That's very scary.
Yeah.
That really is.
That's even more scary. A random mass shooting, rather than violence that's directed at particular individuals. Or
that is right.
The Terry, I'll let you kick off a piece of this too, because you shared some information with Shirley and I, and Shirley has some too that she wants to share. But in letting our audience know, we've talked around and we've given a summary of it, the business of incarceration, and telling people how many people that this country is leading the world as far as incarcerating people. How this, you know, we need to jump down to the meat of this now. Okay.
Yeah, there was an article in the Richmond Free Press on July 9th of this of 2012, and it was written by Deborah Mathis. She was speaking on the issue in going on Louisiana, mm-hmm. and she was talking about the Bowie State now imprisons more than its people, one in 86 adults than anywhere else in the world. So there, it's a lot of folks, and you got black men, one in 14, they're incarcerated. And I think locally, if I'm correct, maybe Keith can jump in on this. I think it's like one in nine. In Virginia, but I'm not sure. One in nine or one in 12 that are incarcerated as far as the black males. But it's very high. And if you can imagine living in a community or among a culture mm-hmm. in which everywhere you look, you know, folks have been incarcerated. And a lot of things that's encouraging this is a lot of in the media, which is Russia. That's not new news to anyone. But the way that the rappers are putting information out there, glorifying you know, incarceration. Even when I worked with juveniles years ago, it was like a notch in the belt to say they've served time. And you mentioned juveniles as well. We're not only talking about adult males or adults, period. We're talking about the juveniles. And yes, the women and the young girls was increasingly coming up in numbers to where back in, I guess, late 70s.
Yeah.
Or late 80s, somewhere around there. We were starting to put the kids in the gym. We had to sleep kids the best way we could. And that's when I made the decision to come to the city to work on the front end, to try to keep kids from going upstate, is what they would call it, mm-hmm. so that we can have alternatives for them, you know. And then we're facing that still today with the jail issue, looking for alternatives mm-hmm. to folks being incarcerated as we begin to move into newer buildings and what have you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that whole alternative place is mm-hmm. is important. And looking at
for those that are familiar with alternative programming, that means we're talking about what types of crimes, but just a little teeny bit about that.
You can have petty larceny, and for example, I mentioned earlier about the check writing, mm-hmm. Writing the bad checks.
Mm-hmm.
Your low end, your misdemeanors, pretty mm-hmm. much that could be affected there. People are going in on simple assaults in some cases. You know, people are just being incarcerated. You know, that's the out. And plea bargaining is leading to a lot of that. Mm-hmm. A lot of plea bargaining is going on where they end up serving time and they're pleading guilty. They're walking away with, you know, a record. When, you know, even if they're innocent. And you know, a lot of times it's a lot of fast talk. And the assumption is that a lot of times when people come into the system, even just their initial day in court, that they are already familiar with it and that being incarcerated is no big deal. You know, your family's been there, your friends have been there. But for a lot of people, even getting arrested is a whole new shock, regardless of who all has been arrested around you. You know, when you have to get arrested and go through that whole process, that's a new walk. And we need to treat people like people. The humanistic piece is gone.
Mm-hmm.
We're really just, we're calling it assembly line justice. You know, assembly line incarceration piece is going on. And I'm a member of a leadership roundtable organization. And we're really trying to highlight that. There were some great speakers in town recently, this last weekend, addressing that exact issue, assembly line justice, and how we're just pushing folks right on through, finding all the opportunities to incarcerate people. Mm-hmm. This is the new slavery that's taking place.
Okay, wow. Yes. Comment question?
Yeah, I have a comment. I just want to ask something. Would y'all stipulate that you are speaking of non-violent offenders? So that people, because a lot of people, were with the brain thrust of some of these folks, they're thinking that you're meaning just open the door
And we had that asked of us once we were on the air. Were you just talking about just opening up everybody, every fence in the world?
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Would y'all, you know, clarify that? Nonviolent offenders or whatever? Because I feel if some folks, some of the crimes that some of the people commit, they need to be locked up and throw away the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, once we talked about that, Keith, remember it was nonviolent offenders. I don't know what the percentage of, and you just mentioned, what was the term you just used? Assembly line
justice.
Yeah. But nonviolent offenders make up a whole lot of the populations of our prisons and jails.
Well, both federal and state statistics show that anywhere from 84-point-something% to 86-point-something% are nonviolent offenders. And that if we look at some of the other violent offenses, mm-hmm. In the federal system, you can be classified as a violent offender for a drug offense, depending on the amount and... Mm-hmm. Whether you possessed a gun, you didn't have to use it in the crime.
Right, right.
You could have a shotgun in your house if you kept drugs in the house also. You can be deemed a violent offender. So if you look at some of those that are classified as violent offenders in that approximately 15%,
mm-hmm.
you'll find out that only about 5% are really, truly violent offenders.
Yeah.
And I think... You know, when we talk about this whole system of restorative justice, mm-hmm. a unitive justice approach,
mm-hmm.
and the training that Terry and I recently attended here in Richmond, the idea is that when you start using what is conflict resolution, mm-hmm. Sitting down in circles, sitting around the dinner tables, sitting in group circles and group discussions and mm-hmm. round tables,
mm-hmm.
You start to alleviate the conflicts. So you create a whole culture that is not as prone to conflict or violence. And, you know, we often hear the term that we're bringing another... white guy's philosophy into, well, actually, this is ancient tribal cultures from yeah. most ancient societies,
right,
or
right.
you know, or roots right, of right, our society. Yeah, yeah. Our indigenous cultures here all sat in circle, you know, before they went out yeah. for the hunt and when they came in, or, you know, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a need to send people away very rarely. Because there wasn't that violence, because there was a culture of nonviolence, of mm-hmm. conflict resolution mm-hmm. together. Mm. So,
and that shoots off to another topic I know we won't be able to get into, but with so many nonviolent offenders and so few violent offenders, in some environments leads to predators preying on nonviolent offenses. I mean, it's a whole culture there, yeah. a whole issue there. That's very disturbing to me, that you can write a bad check and you can do time with someone that may have been a multi-killer,
yeah.
You know, yeah. someone who was a rapist, a violent rapist. Yeah. I've seen that happen. I personally have witnessed it.
Excessive
you know.
Tickets, so, tickets, speeding tickets, all that too. Right
so
in
it's a lot to think. And this is our system in this country.
Well, in the past decade, it was a 5-year mandatory minimum in Virginia for driving.
Yeah.
Your third time on a suspended
so
license.
So that means for 5 years you can go to jail.
Yes.
So.
And that you don't get, there's no separation there.
Yeah.
But anyway, having, thank you for, you know, we talk about alternative sentencing, whatever. There's a whole piece involved with that as well. There's no way we're going to get to delve into all of this the way this topic really needs to be. Discussed, even on a regular basis. A few years ago, we were talking about, or we did a forum having to do with the barriers facing mm-hmm. offenders, ex-offenders. That's the first time I heard the term. I think I heard you using it, Keith, when I first heard it. The barriers, with locking up so many people, families are right. affected. People's livelihoods are affected. They don't stay in prison forever. As you, with today's, what you said, today's prisoners make tomorrow's neighbors, whatever.
Yes.
Come out, can't find a job, whatever. There are so many barriers when you bring so many, locking up so many people, millions of people, and then bringing them back into society, eventually to go back into jail. You want to address that, Keith?
Well, I think, as we were saying before, I think there's an incentive. We have an incentive to... reincarcerate, mm-hmm. to increase criminal activity, to divide communities so that there is more crime, mm-hmm. because there is a big business. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable within communities.
Mm-hmm.
But it is just like everything else. It increases that 1%. You know, it increases mm-hmm. those huge corporations who have the investments. I've said it before, you know, when we lock somebody up from our community, we not only take away their income, and many times their families end up on our welfare rolls receiving assistance, you take away their tax contribution, you take away what they contribute to your local business, and then your taxpayer dollars are paying normally a corporation that's at least outside of the state, and many times outside of the country, to bring in the services to those jails and prisons at a cheaper rate. So,
you know what's interesting that you say, as far as you saying that their child support, though, continues, as far as the arrearage. And that is a big concern. Another piece that the Leadership Roundtable is speaking of, you know, even though they're incarcerated, that all the taxes and stuff aren't being paid, but their child support is still on the books. It's still on the books. And when they come out, we're looking at arrearage, meaning past due amounts, the amount they could
not pay. Getting locked up again because you can't pay it.
Well, then they couldn't get a job either to make the money to pay it. Mm-hmm. You know, transportation. If they did get a job, then they couldn't get to it. You know, so
License. You could lose your license for not paying your child support.
That's right. Yeah. And then they have to also pay that off before they can get that back. Yeah. So they come out with such a debt. And that's one big barrier as you move into that segment of it. It's such a debt that they walk out of those prisons with. That where do you start? You know, is it easier to be just get locked up again? Is it easier?
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And one of the things we're dealing with right now, and tomorrow we'll be addressing this in a House subcommittee, is the ban on TANF for drug-related offenses.
Mm-hmm. TANF is a law that's
temporary assistance for needy families, and the federal government allows drug offenders to be banned, lifetime ban. Doesn't apply to murderers or rapists or anyone else, just drug offenders.
Mm-hmm. Did you say lifetime ban?
It's a lifetime ban, and years ago when we first put in legislation, we have legislation coming up tomorrow, and for a lot of our topics, people can go to nationinside.org.
Yes, I do.
There's different campaigns regarding private prisons, the Sustainable Freedom, which is restorative justice. The Community Restoration Campaign is working here in Virginia on the TANF issue. But the amazing thing is that the actual fiscal impact statement produced by the General Assembly shows that over 60% of those dollars are being taken away from child care, child services, and the family, the children, not the offender themselves, but the money that TANF is being denied, it would be going to the children and the family, particularly a large amount of it for child care services. So what you're saying is either those families have to keep that person out of the home, or they lose those services.
Right. Right.
So it's intentional.
Yes. And I come from social services. That is true.
We got a couple of minutes before we do break, because when we come back, we want Shirley want to do the employment piece there. But, Keith, because I don't want us to lose piece of this, this is in General Assembly right now in Virginia. And for those who are interested in knowing how they can be supportive, we want them to know what they can do. So I want you to hold that thought. You had something to say to add to what Keith just said?
Yeah. Also, I don't know if him and Ms. Dyson, also the part about getting housing. They use it also to
Is that a part of that bill,
No, but I'm saying they...
No,
they,
the bill he was talking about, I think, addresses that as well.
Right. But I'm saying they deny people the... if they have an offense, they can't even get housing through redevelopment and housing or any type of government housing. You're denied that. Mm-hmm. So that means they have to go to private sector. And then the private sector, if they don't have a job or if they qualify, they don't. So they have a hard time getting housing.
Right. You know, felonies, if they have a felony, they can't go back to redevelopment and housing. You know, creating courts and so forth in our area. They can't go back into those neighborhoods. So they're there during the day. And then by night or whenever, you know, they think the police are coming through there, they're out of there.
They can't go back at all. Not
they
to visit
cannot
the family.
Reside there. They cannot reside there.
They cannot reside
there. Can they visit their families?
They do. They can. Yeah, but they, at least I think they can. Let me not speak
there
too soon.
There was something going on.
At one point, it would be trespassing.
Yeah. It
and
is
they
trespassing.
They couldn't be in the area. If they had a felony, if they're convicted of a felony, they cannot be in on the property. But I think a lot of that has become very lax. So they're there, but I know they can't be on the lease and they can't acquire housing with the housing.
That's a whole lot going on with
right,
that.
Right, it is. A lot. I've known people to be a re- what she's saying about, as far as them being, they cannot be on redeveloping and housing property.
Yes,
if they are found on it, they will be. They can be arrested.
Yeah. Even if they got children, even if they come into
that's
see
right.
Family.
Right,
they'll
take, that's a big
crazy.
Separation of the families.
Yeah. We got a couple of minutes to break. Shirley, when we come, because when we come back from break, I want to go back to TANF because I'm really interested. Because since that bill is, that's coming up tomorrow, Keith, in General Assembly?
Tomorrow morning, yeah.
Early tomorrow morning, okay. I wonder if Keith is looking tired. He's ready to put on his boxing gloves for General Assembly on that. But, so we want to talk about that. But a couple of things, Shirley, mm-hmm. on the employment piece.
Go ahead.
No. I wanted to
being in HR for 30-some years, I've often seen how when we have people that, you know, on the state application, have you ever been arrested or convicted or something, certain things. There was an article in Work in Richmond a few weeks back, and it talked about that. People use that to just not to look at your application at all if you say you've been arrested. And the information that I got says in doing so, the EEOC reinforces long outstanding position that considering arrest and conviction records could result in illegal discrimination based on national origin and race. I just thought this information needed to be put out, Ben. It says basically because the African American and Hispanic people have historically been, you know, they would be highly affected by this. And I do know that when I was still working before I retired, we took training. We had to take training online that showed us how to look at individuals who had been arrested or been convicted. Convicted. You know, if somebody's been convicted of embezzlement and you have wanted, they're applying for scrubbing the floor, that is not justified. And that's sort of what this is saying here. And mm-hmm. You know, personally, you know, I have a daughter who because of family thing with her and her daughter, it's an issue high in her different places. Mm-hmm. She can't get a job.
Because she has to check the block that says she's been arrested?
Uh-huh.
Does it matter whether it says felony or
it's a misdemeanor. But because I think there's a law that says that you don't work with children or you don't work in nursing homes or something if you've got certain, you know, like assault. Yeah, assault, you know, even though it was her daughter and it was a misdemeanor.
Wow.
So she can't get jobs, you know, she can't get jobs. I hope it, I've been hoping, but when I saw this, I printed it out because I was going to check it a little further with some of the lawyer friends that I have.
That's it. It means that we got a lot of illegal applications out here.
Devil to Thomas.
Wow.
I don't know if you remember, you were talking earlier about that form, Collateral Consequences of Criminal Convictions. Senator Maxwell did get some legislation passed back in 2003. To kind of restrict what you could consider with the criminal background and applying it appropriately, like
yeah.
a bank.
Yeah.
If you're a bank embezzler, you're not going to get hired.
Would that be the barrier crimes that they listed that we had to go by?
Well, there are barrier crimes, but even beyond that, we're really looking at a nationwide campaign for Ban the Box, which
yes.
is... the city of Portsmouth last year asked for a study. I believe Newport News has actually implemented it as a mm-hmm. local ordinance. Mm-hmm. And we probably should ask Mayor Dwight to do the same thing here in Richmond. But to at least stop it on the initial application so that a person has a chance to go to an interview, actually have the same opportunity as someone else
yes.
before that is considered.
Yeah. Ban the yeah. box. If that's a follow-up show we need to do.
Oh, I'd certainly be glad to do
I
that.
Think that we need to because there's something needs to happen on that.
Yeah.
Because we got too many applications now floating around. That is a big, big issue.
Yes.
A big one. So we're going to put a check mark right there that we have to do a follow-up, and we will maybe is it Senator Maxwell? Who initiated the campaign?
Well, it was Senator Maxwell's subcommittee that initiated.
Who would be a good
Of course, he's retired and gone now.
Yes. Well, I bet he still likes to talk.
Well, no, he's passed. But
oh, well, then no, he does not like to talk. Moving on. Moving on. I did not know. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Who next? Who's next in line, Keith? That can talk.
Well, I know that his legislative aide at the time, his chief of staff, actually, is now working with the city of Portsmouth, and I think they just last year asked for a study, you know, regarding the impact of this, an economic impact.
And what we need to do, because we need to ban the box. The box need to just go away.
And nobody's saying, you know, don't consider
that.
It's just that before that person has the chance to face-to-face interview, give them the opportunity to at least get a call back on a job interview before that information
based
has
on
to
their
be
experiences
revealed.
And education or whatever.
Like so much double jeopardy. They've done their time. Now they still got to wait for the right to vote to go through all this, you know, and then even the employment pay.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to, we got to pause for the calls to pay some bills. But you know what? When we come back, we're going to take back up this discussion. Terry, I'm going to ask you to reiterate what you just said since we got a break so right away. And then we're going to go to Tanner because that's coming up. And I think it's really key that we support that in whatever way we can. Audience, you stay right there. We're going to be right back.
And now, back to Speaking from the Heart.
Welcome back, audience. Welcome back. I'm your host, Gloria Taylor Edwards. It's the first of the month, and so speaking from the heart is Women on Point, and the topic this evening, the business of incarceration, U.S. incarceration. Of course, in house with me is none other than, I'm going to do their names real quick because we got to jump in here real fast. My co-host for Women on Point is Shirley T. Burke, our guest commentator, our subject matter expert on this, whether she wants to be or not. Okay. Terry Dysick, a founder of Guidance, Inc., and Keith de Blasio of Advocare, Inc. And having said that, if you missed the first part of the discussion, hopefully you will be able to hear a rebroadcast, or we do hope to have it running on the website, my website, by this weekend. Moving on, because we've got a lot of territory to cover. Terry has more information to share. Keith has with General Assembly in session, this 2013 General Assembly in session. We only have a few minutes to do it in. And Keith mentioned TANF, and he told us what that acronym stands for. Once he tells you what the acronym stands for, you know what it means and why you need to be interested in it. And it's coming up in General Assembly. Keith is fighting it, and we need to be a part of being proactive on this topic. I know I want to be. I'm speaking for myself, whether I have someone locked up right now or whether I have someone on TANF or not. Keith, tell us about TANF, what's going on, where we are right now. Give us the whole spiel.
Well, the legislation that's going through is to opt us out of this TANF ban. The federal ban for temporary assistance for needy families allows drug offenders to be permanently banned from receiving assistance from TANF.
Right.
Now, each state is allowed to opt out, and over 30 states have opted out of this ban. They thought it was unfair, they thought it did more damage than good, so they've opted out of this ban. Some completely, some in part, we actually allow certain drug offenses to receive food stamps. That's one of the things we've done over the years. But this would be opting those drug-related crimes out of this ban. And it has passed the House on a vote of 32 to... I mean, excuse me. It has passed the Senate on a vote of 32 to 8. Tomorrow it'll be before the House Subcommittee, Health, Welfare, and Institutions Subcommittee number 4, I believe it is. Oh. And what we're doing is we're trying to gather support to encourage the House members not to table the bill as they have done in the past or leave it in committee. It was something that actually Governor McDonnell originally supported years ago, was mm-hmm. actually a co-patron when the first bill made it through, and it was amended to only apply to food stamps for possession charges, things like that. So that we've had support from the administration, from the governor, but the House of Delegates has continued over the years to stymie this legislation to opt out of the ban. And so tomorrow morning it's up. I encourage anybody that's ready to support it. We have, you know, an automatic way that you can go on, just put in your zip code and send a letter to your legislator and to the committee members there that will be hearing the bill. And you can go to Community Restoration Campaign. It's Virginia Community Restoration Campaign. But that campaign is actually part of nationinside.org. And nationinside.org, if you go to the campaigns, you'll see the Community Restoration Campaign. You click on that. There's Take Action
mm-hmm.
Where you can just go about the TANF ban.
And you click your zip code in there. That puts in your support.
Right. If you go to that support, SB 835, I believe it is,
mm-hmm.
You'll find that there. There's information on Facebook. I'm sure if you searched for... SB 835, because I've posted it as a Facebook event.
You'll find
the link to get there, one way or the other. But the easiest way to go to nationinside.org, and then you can see all the other campaigns that are grassroots organizations mm-hmm. all over the country that are working on these different issues, more about what we were talking about with the private prisons. But yeah, to get those letters in, we have over 100 letters now. I would love to reach a goal of 250 letters by tomorrow morning. It's been growing. We've only been doing this for the past day.
One day.
Wow. Yeah, there's huge support for this.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why the House continues to put it into committee and table it or leave it in the committee without voting on it is because they mm-hmm. really don't want to do an up or down vote. You know, we've seen this in Congress quite a bit because we know where the public's at. You know, it's kind of like the voting rights restoration. We know that 70% of the public believe that voting rights should be automatically restored. As long as you don't make it an absolute up and down vote, nobody can tell where you are at. So these delegates our House are putting these things to the side so that they don't have to answer to the public.
And what, supporting this, why is it important for us to support this, Keith?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that if we want people to succeed when they come back from prison. Financially, this country cannot sustain itself incarcerating people at the rate we do, particularly recidivists. Those who come home can't get a job, can't stay with their family because their family needs some type of assistance, so they have to be in separate housing, as we talked about before. We just can't sustain that. You know, economically, we can't sustain it. And who would you rather have for your neighbor? Somebody that's out there and got a job and working to support themselves and their family, or somebody who is forced into a situation
mm-hmm.
that they can't have a place to live, they don't have any assistance, and they don't have a job?
Yeah.
I think it's even worse that it's the drug dealers and not the murderers.
Well, yes.
I think that is just as bad as all of the rest of the stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that you have somebody that had committed a crime so horrendous, and they're not even affected by the law.
Well, I'll tell you, the original thought with Congress, if there is such a thing, was that...
He makes jokes this time of night.
Yeah.
Was that many people were using food stamps to buy drugs.
Yeah, okay.
So by creating this... you know, where you can't trade vouchers. But now we have EBT cards. We have electronic means. I'm sure there's still ways to get around the system.
Yeah.
But it's so hard now for somebody to just trade off benefits for drugs. And so that is gone. That whole reasoning behind that is gone. And I think, like I said, you know, we look at the fiscal impact statements over the years, and the original one we got showed 66% of the funds being denied are being denied for the child services. Not for that person, but for their children's services.
Well, you know, I've had, when I was a social worker, I had a lady tell me, say, Ms. Dysick, I cannot get a job. I need the money. So I had to think about that thing. And she was right, because any penny over wipes out everything. I met a woman recently who, because she got a minimum wage paying job, basically, she lost her child care. So that hindered, you know, her keeping a job, because she had no one to keep the kid, because the little assistance she was getting, where she only had a small copay for the child care, that was dismissed because of her employment now. You know, and I hope that somewhere down the line we can look at that. When people do become gainfully employed and can begin to stand on their own, that they still have at least 6 months possibly before they snatch everything from under them, because they need time to adjust. They still need time to get things in order. Yeah, it's
what could you say back to her? Don't wait a minute. I'm sorry.
The one who said that she could not work. I mean, yeah, she didn't need a job because she needed the money. I had to think about it first, and she broke it all down. And you know, and I here I am working in social services, thinking I'm more on the helping end. And I was like, wow, we're encouraging, you know, this mindset. We're encouraging this type of existence. And all I could say is, oh, I did not look at it that way. I did not look at it from her shoes, because we're taught to help you get employed, help you get, you know, sustainable income and a decent place of living. But you can't really just jump into that. There's a transition period that we need to support.
Yes.
And it's not supported. And now it's even more of a strain with what has been shared tonight about, you know, the drug dealers and, you know, not being able to get support in the kids is taken from the children's daycare. That daycare piece. We need people to watch the children.
We do. We do.
This is totally irrelevant, but I can say it anyhow. If we would stop paying people that don't farm, that have large farms, we pay them not to farm, and put some of that money into these areas we are talking about. People that are rich own lots of property. In America, we pay them not to farm. They're not farmers. They're not farmers, but they're paid not to farm. And see, I was on the Planning Commission. That's what always got me. They were always fussing about things, about costs and stuff. But that's welfare to me.
Wow.
That's the different type of welfare that we're talking about. If we would stop giving welfare to the rich and put some of that money where it's needed with those kids that we're talking about here that's not getting it because of that TANF law, I think things would change. I know that's irrelevant, but I wanted to say that.
Corporate welfare.
That's what it is. That's what you know what I'm talking about.
It goes back to this whole economics, and yes, I
know you know
we pay corn subsidies.
Yes, we do.
The reason why it's so cheap to put high fructose corn syrup in everything you eat is because the government is subsidizing it.
Yes, and but who's getting that? I wonder who's in charge of it. Who gets that?
Wow. All these subsidies, the subsidies of the private contractors that are in our prisons.
Yes.
The reservation centers down in Nevada that are run out of the correctional, the Department of Corrections in the correctional institution, where they can pay less than minimum wage. Here in Virginia, we have correctional enterprises where we can pay, you know, under a dollar and produce the same products much cheaper and sell them. It has to be, we have to break down this economic issue, the socioeconomic discrimination, to begin with. I'm talking about that right now with what's going on with the Armstrong High School choir that can't go to New York when they've got gold and silver medals for winning as champions.
They cannot go.
Really?
There's this whole economic structure that is intentionally breaking us down and breaking us down. And if we take away the subsidies of the prisons and put it into early education, since we know that 50% of those incarcerated in Virginia have a fourth grade reading level or below, 50% are dyslexic or dysgraphic. We know we could do something in first to third grade about that and decrease the amount of crime, deviant behavior that becomes crime. But we don't do that because somebody's getting rich off the back end and the results.
It's so wicked.
It is corporate welfare and industrial welfare in so many ways.
Now, two things on that. Now, just one more thing on the Armstrong piece. You know, those children were not only going, they were going to be the primary performers in the opportunity that they had. But also, as we look at going down and working with the younger populations, which we aim to do with the restorative justice program and a lot of programs that are out there trying to reach at the younger elementary age, we still need to be mindful because we got to make sure the suspension pieces do not start to look like the incarceration reasons. You know, anything they do, they get suspended. You know, right now we're ranking pretty high in Henrico. It was recently in the paper about the high suspension level, and our kids, you know, are getting suspended for so much. And even those who try to avoid getting into fights and doing things, you know, it starts early. So they keep getting suspended. There goes the education. They're not before an instructor or someone to help them move forward academically. And then it moves into the criminal world, and it goes on and on and on. But it starts early. And I hear you, Keith, saying we got to go to that earlier population. We just have to keep our eyes open, and we got to make sure that we're out here voting and we're paying attention. Right. You know, a lot of times, you know, politicians use fear tactics to get us to vote, and we sometimes vote in the wrong direction based on what's out there.
Or we don't hold them accountable.
Right. In the journal under Justice Policy Institute in May 2000, you know, they talked about how politicians were doing that. We came up with a zero tolerance, tried juveniles as adults, a truth in sentencing, abolish parole, three strikes, you're out. All those things were, you know, they were singing them nice and loud, and, you know, people went for that. But this is where we are.
Business.
This is where we are.
The business of incarceration.
The business of incarceration, and it is money-making. In the original article I had spoken about the Richmond Free Press, you know, the Corrections Corporations of America, that's the nation's leading and largest for-profit prison chain. And they lobbied the Arizona legislature to pass a law allowing people to stop Latinos and question them about their citizenship. And that was so that they could have a private prison to house the women and children. So they can, you know, continue to add prisons for different purposes. And so in Louisiana, that was done.
Wow. So we've got to, I've got to wrap up here. We've got another show behind us. It has been fast. We did not get to cover all this. Terry, part two coming up. Terry.
Yes.
Part two.
Yes.
Oh, so Keith has promised us, knowingly or unknowingly on air, that we're going to do a piece on Band the Box.
Yes.
We're going to pull a show together on that. And we want to, we're going to have to do the focus on one area to get it all in. And so we're going to brainstorm off air about that one, audience, so we can get it all in. Right now, we want TANF to pass tomorrow. So for anyone who has access to the computer, people out there who may not be computer literate, we'll find out a way how you can support it. Maybe I can go in. I can put in other zip codes because he lives in. If someone lives in another zip code for them and they're a voter, I can put in their name and stuff for them. But we want to support that. We have to start somewhere.
And unfortunately, I don't have the constituent hotline that I usually have with me.
That's okay. That's all right.
But you can probably get it somewhere off of 211 or something. And it's just SB 835. So.
To definitely support it. But we hope that there's been some information shared here that will enlighten you, that you will want to be a part of the solution, because we need one in this business of incarceration. I haven't said that. We'll be rebroadcasting. I may rebroadcast this show next week. We'll be back in house with you next week, either live or not live. And having said that, I want my guest, we have 30 seconds apiece for them to go off as they please. And I'm going to let Keith be last. You're going to be first, Miss Shirley.
Okay.
And go off, and then Miss Terry, and then keep. And then audience, next time you hear my voice, next week.
What we've been talking about tonight, I believe, is about, I call it surgery for the soul. And we all need to have a little surgery on our soul to take some action. Those of you that know Shirley T and you heard the information about where to do some help with this tan, I challenge you to go on that on the computer and do something about it. We need to do something about it.
Do something.
I'm Terry Dysick, and I know that this business of incarceration is serious in all the areas that I've worked in. I challenge you to get involved with some organization. There are plenty out here. Go on the website, find something within your community or in your churches or somewhere. Get involved. Your voice counts, and we can make a difference if we work together. I'm with Guidance Incorporated, providing mediation services and assistance to parents and all other types of relationships so that we can prosper.
Yeah, I just want to say before I go, when we talk about the voting rights restoration piece, you know, this is not a bill where they get to make the decision. It's merely them passing a resolution to allow the voters to vote on the issue. And this is something that has been voted down and put off for years and years and years. The voters need to stand up and say, don't stop referendums from coming to the people. Let us have a chance to vote. If you say this is a government by the people, let us vote on the issues. And no matter whether you're getting involved in prison issues or TANF, welfare, corporate welfare, health care, get involved in something in the government. Make legislators know that you are paying attention on whatever issue it is, because that's when they start to act responsibly. I encourage you to go to nationinside.org and look at the different campaigns and branch out from there.
All right. Well said. On that note, audience, good night.
You've been listening to Speaking from the Heart with your hostess, Gloria Taylor Edwards. Stay tuned again on next week, same time, same station, WCLM 1450 AM, Holland Springs, Richmond. Good night.
Mine is in your